I would like you throughout this morning's message to remember the Titanic. Remember the Titanic. As we work through this chapter, I want you to picture the tragedy of the Titanic as we talk about the tragedy of Tyre, because they're very similar in many ways. The tragedy of Tyre is like the tragedy of the Titanic. So remember the Titanic as we work our way through. Now, what is Tyre? Tyre was an empire in its own right, not having conquered nations with military might, but through its vast trade network, building trade routes in which nations prospered and benefited from their commerce and their multiple products, which came from the entire known world. In this sense, we may see them as a picture of one of the world's kingdoms, all of which have some commonalities and stand in concert opposing the Lord's great kingdom. Now, this particular trade kingdom had many good qualities, but it was truly dominated by evil and a world-focused mentality. So please, join me at chapter 27 in verse 1 as we begin to talk about the tragedy of Tyre. First of all, we're going to see the proclamation of a tearful elegy. The proclamation of a tearful elegy. And it begins with the Lord's pronouncement in verse 1. The word of the Lord came again unto me. Have we heard that before in the book of Ezekiel? Those of you that have been with us all along have known this is probably about the 30th time in the book that we have seen those exact same words. The word of the Lord came again unto me, saying. God was speaking through his prophet. He was communicating a divine message. It is important that we realize how important this is. The word of the Lord, verse 1. Then in verse 3 it says, thus saith the Lord. Towards the end of the verse, don't forget, these are the words of God. This is the Lord's pronouncement. But it is also a lamentation poem. A lamentation poem. Now, many of you recognize I have an affinity to alliteration here. And you're saying, sometimes, Pastor, you go with some pretty big words. And I'm not sure they always are right or good. And I'm telling you, I'm sure I've been guilty of not getting the right word. But I'll tell you what, my alliteration has helped me work hard at trying to get the right word to define the text and to explain it. Like this first word in the main point there, the proclamation of a tearful elegy. Some of you aren't clear what an elegy is. Well, an elegy, according to Webster, is a poem of serious reflection. A poem of serious reflection, and in English literature, usually it is a lament for the dead. Now notice exactly what it says here in verse 2. Now thou son of man, take up a lamentation for Tyre. A lamentation is a lament. It's a funeral song. It is a sad and a weeping expression of deep sorrow. And notice the selected composer here. He says, son of man. That is a phrase that Jesus uses quite frequently in the New Testament to define himself. Especially we find that in the book of Luke and in Mark. He is the son of man. It speaks to of his humanity. And this simply tells us that this prophet here was a human. So this is a book of lamentations, and it was the funeral song for the city of Jerusalem and its nation. And this funeral song will be for Tyre. It is a prophetic statement predicting its death. So when Ezekiel's writing this, when God gave him this, Tyre was the envy of the world at that point. So this has not happened yet. He says, but you write this funeral song in anticipation of the fact that they're going to die. Now, I do call it a lamentation poem because it is a poem. Most of this chapter is written in poetic form. You may not see it in your translation because somehow English doesn't capture the rhyming or the meter of the Hebrew. But I guarantee you it is a poem. It is an elegy and a lamentation elegy. Something that is very sad. So thirdly, I want you to see here the lovely picture. This is what makes it even more sad. Because this is taking the life of a city, which is one of the most glorious cities in the world at this point. In verse 3, he says, "And say unto Tyre, O thou art that art situated at the entrance of the sea, that art a merchant of the people for many coastlands, thus saith the Lord God, O Tyre, thou hast said, I am of perfect beauty." That's what you said this morning when you looked in the mirror, didn't you? You said, wow, God can't make them any better than this, right? Didn't you say that? You didn't say that. Okay. Well, they said that. I am of perfect beauty. And notice the next verse. Verse 4. Thy borders are in the midst of thy seas. Thy builders have perfected thy beauty. Apparently, that appears to be God speaking there. So they said, we're of perfect beauty, and God almost agreed with them. They were situated at the entrance of the sea. That means everyone who wanted to travel or engage in commerce in the world by sea would find their best options going through this city. Tyre was located in just off the coast of northern Israel, just a little bit to the north of them, and it was barely off the coast. They were probably only about 300 yards or less off the coast. That's how close that island was where that big city. They had part of the city was on the mainland and part of the city was on the island. And the part that we're really looking at especially is the part that was on the island. So in some ways we're going to make some comparison to the city of Tyre like the city of New York City today. New York City is considered the Big Apple. It's considered our most prominent city in America. And if you want to travel anywhere abroad, most likely you're going to find an opportunity through New York City. Now, there are many other cities that you can travel abroad as well, but I've found through the years that New York City, especially when I'm going to Africa or Europe, that you can get your best prices going through New York City. It is the most important key hub for a lot of travel. In Tyre's day, there was no other city that came even close. No city that came even close. And so it was situated at the entrance of the sea, it says it there in verse 3. They were so critical there. The key connection for many nations and cities around the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. You are a merchant for the people for many isles, it says. All the places that God did their merchant trading came through Tyre. And their own view of themselves was pretty clear in verse 4. We're number one, they said. We're it. We're number one. What a beautiful city. What a beautiful city. It had to be the world's greatest and best. Now, I want you to just think for a moment. If you could travel to any city in the world today and visit that city, what city would you want to go and visit? What, in your mind, is the world's greatest, most beautiful, most perfect city? In that day, there was no question. It was Tyre. It was the cream of the crop. It was the best and most glorious city. And that's what makes this elegy more tearful. The world's most beautiful city is going to be destroyed. Even the Lord recognizes their beauty when he says it in verse 4. Yeah, you were a pretty city. You were. You'd perfected your beauty in many ways. So this is the proclamation. He's going to tell them what it is. Now let's get into the details where we see the prominence of their trade empire. I mean, he just nails it. This is the bulk of the chapter here, the prominence of their trade empire. And I've only got 2 points on this, so you want to write them down quickly. The first one is the fact that the ship image is pictured. They're going to picture a ship image here in verses 4 through 11. Now, when I say that, I want you to think about the Titanic. I want you to think about where that Titanic was built and how it came together and how the various tradesmen came and worked on that, the steel and the wood and the cloth and the whatever it was that went into that building. That's what we're going to see in this section here. Ralph Alexander says, Ezekiel used the imagery of a ship being constructed and equipped to show Tyre's pride and her development of prominence and dominion as a maritime empire. So notice the descriptions. Get your finger ready and look through them. You don't need to write these down unless you want to write them down. I'll give you my notes later. But I want you to see this as we work through just in the verses here. I'm going to move through it verse by verse. And notice the description. In verse 5, he says, they have all made all thy planks or boards of fir trees of Senir. That's the framework of this ship. Pinewood or fir trees that came from Mount Hermon, it says. They have taken cedars from Lebanon to make the masts for thee. So the masts came from the cedar wood of Lebanon, the huge cedar trees. All right? The verse 6 talks about the oaks of Bashan. They have made the oars. So the oars that they did to row this ship was made of oak wood that came from the northern part of Israel. On verse 6, it says that the oaks of Bashan, in the company of the Asherites, it says, have they made thy benches of ivory brought out of the coast of the Kittim. Sometimes the translations here is challenging. This one probably is talking about the deck of that ship. It was made from boxwood that was inlaid with ivory from Kittim. So this was a very ritzy, they made some amazing ships there, inlaid their decks with ivory. Verse 7 talks about fine linen with embroidered work from Egypt was that which they spread forth to be thy sail. Blue and purple from the coast of Elisha was that which covered thee. So the sails were made from fine Egyptian linen, all embroidered work, perhaps probably with logos. Different ships had different logos. And these mammoth vessels were decked out with beautiful sails and impressive flags, which identified them as a part of the mighty fleets of Tyre. In verse 7, it also talks about the dyes that came there. We're not sure where this place is, but they colored those sails. So the brilliant sails and the flags that they flew would give these ships amazing beauty and color. Then he talks about verse 8, the inhabitants of Sidon and Arvad were thy mariners, thy wise men, O Tyre, were in thee, were thy pilots. So the seamen were the rowers. Some of those ships had over 200 men in the galleys rowing the ships back and forth. They had sails too, but they also used the oars and rowed. So these guys were hired from Sidon and Arvad. Apparently, these were well-known cities for their maritime school, training young men to be super rowers. Can you imagine that? Thousands and thousands of men went through that to that school to learn how to. All right, so they went to school there, and the ones that worked hard, they no doubt trained hard for that, and they got selected for their rowing duty, and they no doubt made money on that. So they were the mariners, but they also had the pilots that came from Tyre itself. Some of these men were hired from out of other countries, but the pilots, they made sure that they came from Tyre itself in verse 8. Then in verse 9, we have another group here. It's the ancients of Jebel and its wise men were in thee, thy caulkers. So here we've got these caulkers here, the special guilds of caulkers. Now, you know what caulk is today. Some of you guys that build, you know, you use caulk guns and you caulk and you put it in the holes. And that's what these guys did. They caulked those ships to make them watertight so that they would float. And they not only caulked them at the beginning, they also had to repair. They were a special group of men that did repair work in making sure that these ships would be watertight. Then he talks about the wise men and merchants who accompanied these ships in order to barter and to secure the best deals. They were the key dealers for this empire. Verse 10 talks about the Persian, they have Persia and Lud and Put. These are the cities from Egypt where perhaps they sailed on various ships to protect and bring safety to the ships as they went. So they had soldiers on these ships that would also be for protection there. And they had these shields and helmets on thee and set forth splendor. Then in verse 11, it talks about the men of Arvad with thine army were upon thy walls round about in the Gamadon, were in thy towers. They hung their shields upon the walls round about. They have made thy beauty perfect. So these are the other ones were hired soldiers, okay, but these ones are soldiers from their own towns and cities, and the key city with its amazing harbors was protected by an army of hired soldiers from these cities. They posted themselves daily upon the walls and the battlements which surrounded the amazing island. So that is an amazing picture here. So truly, this great sailing vessel pictured the city and nation of Tyre. It was immense and it was impressive. Now, I want you to see this picture to help you just kind of get the visual of it. All right, this is an artist rendition of what this city looked like. You can see it's about 300 yards off from the mainland of the city of Tyre. And in the middle of it, that great temple, you see those temples right in the middle? One is the palace and the other is a temple. We'll talk about that temple tonight because it talks about the king of Tyre, where he lived and he set himself up to be God. But here this city is an amazing, a beautiful city, and it was the focal point. All the trade around the Mediterranean Sea came through this city. And I want you to imagine here, here's what Douglas Stewart says. Tyre is imagined to be a great ocean-going ship, or a ship of Tarshish it's called, which means open sea or deep sea. To visitors to Tyre, the splendid city out in the water would certainly have been easy to compare to a ship heading out to sea, riding the waves, carrying expensive wares to distant coasts. So I want you to just imagine that you're sitting on the coast of the coast there, and you're looking out at that city with its vast walls and the temples coming above the walls. And you see that city as a ship that has just left the harbor and is going out into the Mediterranean Sea. That's what he's saying. And that is the picture of this ship as it leaves port. And God has got some words for this city, this island city, and for its great splendor and its glory in this day. So the ship image is pictured. But let's quickly move to the last part of this chapter and where we see the strong international partnership that they had. What was it that they did? How did they trade the vast empire that they built? Well, we're going to see it here now. The lament song shifts from the picture of its mighty ship to what the ship contains, the vast trade products, and from where they are acquired. Now, I want you to know there are at least 39 different distinct cities and nations referenced in this chapter to trade partners. At least 39. There might be more. It's hard to tell in some cases. Now, I want you to think of all the ships going out from that city to at least 39 different, and I think there's probably more than what they just mentioned here. I want you to think also about the vast shipping trade partners that the United States of America has today. I discovered that we have trade agreements and are trading with at least 180 nations of the world out of the 195. America has trade agreements and is involved in trade with at least 180 different nations around the world. We have an amazing fleet of ships that go out all the time, over 1,200 ships that leave and come back from the ports all around the world. And this is an amazing commercial shipping industry that we have here in America. But America was is just one of many nations that does a lot of shipping and trade. Tyre, almost everybody in the world, the known world at that time, had to come through that city. And all of their fleets of ships, that's where the trading went. So let's look at the list here. And I'm going to go by verse again quickly this time. I'm going to show you in verse 12, we've got Tarshish, that they found all kinds of riches, including silver and iron and tin and lead. It talks about their fairs, and other verses will talk about their markets. I don't know what these fairs are, whether that's the kind of fair that we have, like the Cuyahoga County Fair. But these markets, I know what that is. Is this like a trade show? Maybe they're going to the IX center of that country, and that's where their trade is going. I don't know how they did it, but it's something like that. So Tarshish in verse 12. In verse 13, we've got Javan, Tubal, and Meshech. Now notice here, it talks about slave trade in verse 13. They traded the persons of men. Yes, they were involved in slave trade way back then. So we know that this city was not that godly. It was not good. There was a trouble about it. They did a lot of other shipping, but they did slave trade as well. They brought in copper and bronze as well. Verse 14 talks about Togarmah, trading their fares with horses and horsemen and mules. You wanted to get horses, you got to go to Tyre and say, let's get a ship that goes to Togarmah and get some mules and horsemen there. Dedan in verse 15, they get ivory and ebony. In verse 16, Assyria gave them emeralds and purple dyes, embroidered cloths and fine linen, coal and agate. In verse 17, we find out that they did some trade with Judah and with Israel, where they picked up wheat and penag, which scholars were not sure of what that is, some kind of sweet food, perhaps figs or olives. They also get honey and oil and balm, which is probably medicine. So they did a lot of trading with Israel and Judah. Then they did some trade with Damascus in verse 18, the finest wine and wool that came from there. In verse 19, from Vedan and Javan, where they picked up wrought iron and cassia and calamus, which are spices. They went to Dedan in verse 20, where they get precious clothes for chariots. Different translations to call that saddle cloths. Perhaps heavier blankets for warmth and comfort. Not really sure exactly what those saddle cloths are. In verse 21, they trade with Arabia and Kedar. Lambs and rams and goats. So they're getting animals on these ships and so on. In verse 22, Sheba and Ramah, where they pick up the best spices and precious stones and gold. And in Haran, in verse 23 and 24, Haran, Cana, Eden, Sheba, Asher, and Chilmad. They put them all together there in verse 23 and 24, where it says they get all sorts of things. All right? That's what we get from China. All sorts of things. Blue claws. Did you see that? What are the blue claws? I wonder if that was blue jeans. You know, blue jeans isn't just an America thing. You know, imagine they must have had blue jeans way back then, right? Blue claws? What do you agree? What do you think? We should take a vote on that. I don't know. It says blue claws. Might be blue jeans. All right. Embroidered work, chests made of cedar wood and tied up with cords, full of rich apparel. So they had tons and tons of stuff is what they're saying. The summary is given in verse 25. These ships of Tarshish did sing of thee in thy market, and thou wast replenished and made very glorious in the midst of the seas. They had songs about how you could go and shop at Tarshish. You could get anything you want from all the world. It was a virtual Walmart and Costco put together. In 2022, the USA had 2,778 commercial ships registered. That is, ships coming and going in the World Trade Network. That did not include the thousands of passenger and cruise ships, nor the thousands of yachts and fishing boats, and on we could go. So America is the new Tyre in many ways. Now, there's some other nations that have similar shipping interests, but we can really relate to them in a lot of ways. Well, There's the prominence of their trade empire. The ship image is portrayed, and then he shows us just how strong that trade partnership was. It went through the entire Mediterranean, down the southern coast of Africa, for we don't sure how far, and up the western coast of Europe. Up all the way, they came all the way to England, where they picked up tin there, we know. So Tyre was an amazing trade city. So let's conclude now in verses 26 to 36 and look at the prophecy of their tragic end. Here's where we come to the lamentation. Here's what's going to happen to them. They're going to die. There's going to be a sinking ruin of them. Like a ship that sinks, they're going to be ruined and they're going to go down. That's what it tells us in verse 26 and 27. Thy rowers have brought thee into great waters, and the east wind hath broken thee in the midst of the seas. The rowers brought this great ship all the way out into the deep ocean, and the east wind came along and destroyed the city. It broke it, and it brought it to a shipwreck, and it sunk. Verse 27, thy riches and thy fares, thy merchandise, thy mariners, and thy pilots, thy caulkers, and the traders, and the merchandise, and all the men of war that are in thee, and in all thy company which is in the midst of thee, shall fall into the midst of the seas in the day of thy ruin. He's picturing like all of them are on board that ship, and the ship goes down, and they're all lost in this storm. The location is important, verse 26. The ship, he says, they brought him out to great waters. This place of great waters pictures her glory and her strength. God will destroy Tyre at the height of her glory. He will show the world where real power and glory come from. Jim Thompson said it this way. The sea is her glory, her place of wealth, and it is ironic that the sea becomes her ultimate doom. She was the master of the seas, and God says, get out there, that's where I'm going to destroy you. Psalm 48:7 talks about the east wind breaking ships. Thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with the east wind. Those ships of Tarshish were the ships that came from Tyre. And God is going to break them. Acts 27 describes a severe storm in the Mediterranean Sea where Paul was on board a large ship and that ship shipwrecked. He talked about that east wind that came. And here God says, I'm going to bring an east wind. Now, this time it's not really a literal ship out in the ocean or in the Mediterranean Sea, but he's going to cause them to sink anyways. And the east wind probably is referring to the Babylonians coming from the east because they're the ones that are going to destroy them. And so the shocking and stunning moment in verse 27, everything goes down and sinks. A sinking ruin. This, of course, is still prophetic, remember, because Ezekiel was speaking of a future event. Now, today it's past. But back then was it 580 or so BC. So look at the sorrowful or the shocking response in verse 28 through 32. There is worldwide wailing and mourning here. Verse 28, the pasture land shall shake at the sound of the cry of thy pilots. This is going to be heard and mourned over even the countryside. Everybody's going to hear about the fall of Tyre. Verse 29, And all that handle the oar, the mariners, and all the pilots of the sea shall come down from their ships. They shall stand upon the land. All the shipping personnel will become unemployed and helpless. They're going to have nothing to do. Verse 30, and they shall cause their voice to be heard against thee, and they shall cry bitterly and shall cast up dust upon their heads. They shall wallow themselves in the ashes. They shall make themselves utterly bald for thee and gird themselves with sackcloth, and they shall weep for thee with bitterness of heart and bitter wailing. They're going to mourn severely, wailing, cry bitterly, cast dust upon their heads, wallow in ashes, shave their heads, put sackcloth on. All of these are universal signs of mourning, and weep with bitterness is going to be going on. It's a very strong and sorrowful response. Verse 32 wraps it up with that cry. And in their wailing, they shall take up a lamentation for thee and lament over thee, saying, what city is like Tyre, like the destroyed in the midst of the sea? Has there ever been a city like Tyre? We're number one, remember? Notice the strong reverberations in verses 33 through 36. Strong reverberations. The shocking tidal waves from this event reach all around their maritime empire. In verse 33, when thy wares went forth out of the seas, thou fillest many people. Thou didst enrich the kings of the earth with a multitude of thy riches and of thy merchandise. In the time when thou shalt be broken by the seas and the depths of the waters, thy merchandise and all thy company in the midst of thee shall fall. And it's going to bring great fear and trembling. Verse 35, all the inhabitants of the coastland shall be appalled at thee, and their kings shall be very much afraid, and they shall be troubled in their countenance. The merchants among the people shall hiss at thee. Thou shalt be a terror, and never shalt thou be any more. You're going down, and you'll never come back. Brings fear and trembling, verse 35, to all those that loved her. And it brings malicious joy in verse 36 to some of those merchants, the people that will hiss at them. That is a phrase which may mean to whistle or convey some other unique sound expressing joy or cheering. Sometimes when people cheer and clap at a ball game, they whistle. And that is what this is, the idea is whistling and cheering because of the downfall of Tyre. Now, this is the middle section of this whole story about Tyre. He spends three chapters dealing with Tyre. He spent one chapter dealing with four countries just before these chapters. But now he expands and he goes on and on and on about this city called Tyre. Tonight we will see one of the main reasons why I think he does that. But this morning, let's conclude it with some application. From this chapter here, I have four things to encourage you with. Number one, humble yourself. Humble yourself. This nation and city was extremely proud. That will be especially highlighted in the next chapter. Very proud. They saw themselves as unsinkable. They saw themselves as invincible. Nobody can take us out, because we are the masters of the sea. We've got the navy. We've got these vessels. Nobody can stop us. Proverbs 29:23 says, a man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit. Don't you ever catch yourself in the same attitude and the spirit of these people from Tyre. And we've got to be so careful of that in America, because we're trying to make America great again. We're trying to make America the best. And we want to be number one. It's kind of in our psyche to be able to say, yeah, we're the best. And America may be the best country in the world, but never should that go to our heads in any way. Not to our leaders, not to the people. Because America, if it's good and best, it's because God has blessed us, not because of our goodness. And if you've done something, accomplished something in your life, you have some talent, something that you could easily become proud for, because a lot of people get proud about the things that they do, or the things that they've accomplished, or the people that they're with. Be careful. Pride goeth before destruction, and an haughty spirit before a fall. Proverbs 16:18. This city was a perfect example of how this works. They were proud and self-confident, and at the height of their glory, God brought a storm from the east called Babylon and sunk their ship. Humble yourself. Do not be proud. James 4:10 says, humble yourself therefore in the sight of God, and he shall lift you up. Let God lift you up. Don't you try to lift yourself up. Humble yourself. Number two, beware of the coveting virus. Beware of the coveting virus. Now you just think about that list that I gave of all these things you could get, ivory and gold and metals and animals. And you remember we were back in the book of 2 Kings, we talked about Solomon and all the things that they brought to his kingdom. Some of that was part of this trade route. He and Tyre, I think he kind of helped Tyre get started with it, and then they took over once Solomon was gone. They were bringing peacocks and apes and all kinds of animals and beautiful things to them. We can get the most exciting and beautiful clothes. We can get the best products. We can have it all. And the more you get, guess what? The more you want. Learn to be content with what God has given to you. Charles Feinberg said, the record of Tyre has a peculiar relevance for our day. For those areas in which she excelled and was the envy of the entire world are precisely the fields in which every modern nation seeks superiority. But Tyre has a message for our age. And it is that riches without God are unable to satisfy the heart of man and often keep many from dependence upon God. He's right. You want riches, you want things, you want to covet, and you get what you want, but you'll never be satisfied with it. Somebody asked a rich tycoon years ago who was a multimillionaire in the days when there were only two or three of them around. They asked him, how much does it take to make a man satisfied? How much money does it take? He said, just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. You get that much, you want just more. You're never satisfied with it. The 10th commandment says, folks, thou shalt not what? Covet. Learn to be content. Beware of the coveting virus. It can worm its way into your soul. Because we in America can go to any store and get anything we want today. In fact, we don't even have to go to stores anymore. We can just pull up our phone and push a few buttons and have it delivered right to our door. And we want and we want and we want. Be careful. Because people look to that coveting virus and it takes them away from God. You got to be able to say, with David, I want nothing more than to be in the house of God. That's what I want. And I want His presence and I want my relationship with God. Hebrews 13:5 says, let your manner of life be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Have you ever put two and two together as to why that the last part of that verse comes at the second part of that? It's a part of it. Be content with such things as you have because you've got God. I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. If you got God, you don't need anything else. You say, well, we got to eat. Yeah, I know that. But I think he's talking about the things that you want. Let your manner of life be without covetousness. Lord, help me not to commit the sin of covetousness. Beware of the coveting virus. Number three, trust God's sovereign plan. Trust God's sovereign plan. Now, I want you to just think in terms of what this whole story is telling us in this chapter again. God is saying, Tyre, here you are up on your post, your proud post. You think you're the king of the world. You're the king of the mountain, and I want you to know you're going down. I'm going to take you down, and you're going to go down hard and deep, and you're not coming back up. They had many years to get things right with God, but God did that. He says, you're going down. Why would God just go after a nation and say, you're going down? By the way, God is still doing that to nations today. Did you notice? God was shaking up the world landscape in those days. He was allowing Babylon to come through and take them all out. Israel was going into captivity. Now all her neighbors are facing total destruction. This huge storm called Babylon was coming from the east and was being sent by God for His purposes. Why are you doing that? God, you know what you're doing? Jeremiah 15, verse 23, God calls Babylon the hammer of the whole earth. Look at that. The hammer of the whole earth. Boom. Wow. And at verse 46 of that same chapter, he says, at the noise of the taking of Babylon, the earth is moved and the cry is heard among the nations. When somebody big like Babylon or Tyre gets taken down, the whole world hears about it. When God works His plan, it can cause much fear and shaking around the globe. That is what we're seeing today, much fear and trembling. The world is sitting on the edge of its seat, watching and worried about what will happen next. What's going to happen next in Ukraine? How about Israel? How about North Korea? How about Iran and Mexico and Sudan and Germany, where they're electing new members of parliament today? What is going to happen in the USA today? I mean, every day since January 20th has brought an avalanche of changes, making many news media outlets dizzy and spinning in their seats. What's going to happen today? How many of you tune into your news almost every day to say, what did he do now? What did he do today? You're all interested. We're all interested. Some people are scared to death. The whole world is trembling with uncertainty and fear at the dark and uncertain future. Douglas Stewart said, when he was discussing the significant meaning of this whole chapter, here's what he states. He says, the point is really profoundly simple. God controls the destinies of the world's nations. He says, this basic confidence in the Lord's sovereignty over human history is the common denominator of many biblical passages, and he's right. A truth that must never be taken lightly, he says. Without this confidence, world events can easily be misinterpreted to imply the absence or the weakness of God. Just the opposite, he said, is fortunately the case. He's right. God is not absent in this world, and God knows precisely what He's doing, and we have great hope because of that. We may trust Him and place all our confidence in His sovereign plan. We do not need to be jittering and nervous and walking around on edge and wondering what's going to happen tomorrow, because we know who holds tomorrow. Our God is in control. Trust God's sovereign plan. Finally, put your faith in Jesus Christ. Put your faith in Jesus Christ. This is where God's sovereign plan leads to Jesus Christ. Christ is the one who will take back planet Earth and set up His kingdom. In the meantime, you must place your faith in Him and ask Him to save you. This world is toast, folks. It's going down. It's going down slowly but surely. It's going down pretty fast these days. Man cannot save himself. No president, no leader can save us, only Jesus Christ. Tyre saw themselves as the unsinkable ship. God decided to show them and the world just how vulnerable and sinkable they really were. And by the way, there was another moment in history when God decided to show the world that Christ is the only unsinkable ship. That event took place with the luxury liner called the Titanic that departed from Southampton, England on April 10th in 1912. It was heading towards New York City. This ship had been advertised as the unsinkable ship. I'm convinced that God decided it was going down when they said it's unsinkable. Some of the world's richest people climbed aboard that mighty ocean liner for its maiden voyage. Yet on April 15th in 1912, that mighty ship ran into a little iceberg which sliced the ship's belly wide open so that it began to sink. There were many on that ship who seemed unafraid since they had believed the advertisement, "This ship will never go down, it's unsinkable." Even as the ship began to tilt and shift, sinking lower and lower, the band played on and many still refused to believe the end was coming. Yet within 2.5 hours from the moment it hit that berg, it was going down. It was done. 1,517 people died that night. A tragic death, believing they were on an unsinkable ship. God wanted the world to learn an important lesson. Jesus Christ is the only unsinkable ship. There is no city, no nation, no political party, no leader, no army, no military power, no economic institution, no financial establishment, no insurance company, no anything in the world which is unsinkable. Only Jesus Christ. Jesus said in John 5:24, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me shall not come into judgment, but shall be passed from death unto life." What a wonderful promise. Put your faith in Jesus Christ, not in America, not in a president, not in a military, not in your financial institutions, not in anything else, Lord, but in Jesus Christ and Him alone. And may God help you as you do put your faith in Him today.